So my name's Matt, one of the church staff. If you are new, please let me add my welcome to you. And we've just started this series recently, or we're halfway through it now, actually. We just started it, we're halfway through it. All for One. And it's all about different one another verses in the New Testament. And there are 59 different commands with the phrase one another in the New Testament. So it's quite a lot to be going on with, isn't it? Fortunately, quite a few of them are the same, which makes it a little bit easier. And today we're particularly looking at ones, if this clicker works. Okay, did you do that? Okay, right, you might have to do some clicking for me because I don't think this is working. Thank you. There are 59 different ones in the New Testament, as I said. Today we're focusing on one particular one, encouraging one another. We're going to talk about encouraging one another. What is encouragement? What is it? It's basically something that enhances courage. It supplies you with confidence. It's something that pushes you to continue, to persevere. It's a sense that you're on the right track. And you might think, well, okay, but why are we talking about it? Isn't it just sort of a peripheral thing that you sort of do on the side? It's a bit, meh. You know, why are we talking about encouraging? Well, actually, I think what we say to one another and whether or not we encourage one another is actually a really big deal. In our culture, I would say we are not great, generally, at encouraging people. You go to America and they're amazing at it. They're really positive about everything. If you go there in your English, you sort of feel a bit awkward and embarrassed. Like, oh, really? We're just not very comfortable with it. And not only that, but public discourse right now is not very positive, is it? It's all about pushing down the opposition and promoting yourself. You never say anything positive about the other side. And the way people speak to other online, if you ever look at any online discussion, it's horrible. It's horrible how people speak to each other. So we could do with encouragement. But for our purposes, I think it's helpful to see that there's basically two types of encouragement. We need both, but one is more important than the other. And what's interesting is that both of the types, I think, come out in a book of the Bible called 1 Thessalonians, which is a letter written to the church in the old Greek city of Thessaloniki, which still exists. And the first type of encouragement is the most common. We see it and we do it every day. It's when we encourage somebody for something about them. We could call it compliment-centered encouragement. And it's things like this. Hey, that's a great haircut. You look really good. Your cooking is phenomenal. You could be a professional. You're really wise. What a great gift. You led that meeting really well. It definitely helped with that situation when you arrived. Now, the common thread here is that these are all things nobody has ever said to me. Words I lie awake at night longing to hear. I got one sympathetic R and lots of laughter. These are just the sort of thing, you know, people say these sort of things every day, don't they? And, you know, just basic compliments. It's not a churchy thing, just generally. People say this sort of thing in daily life. And it's just a kind thing to do, isn't it? To speak to people this way. It's not a trick. This is just, you know, this is just true. And in 1 Thessalonians, the author really wants to encourage the church. And it's a big reason why he's writing. And he says some really affirming things. So listen to this. These are things that he says to them. In 1 Thessalonians 1, we remember before our God and Father your work produced by faith, your labor prompted by love, and your endurance inspired by hope in our Lord Jesus Christ. A bit later he says, you became a model to all the believers in Macedonia and Achaia. The Lord's message rang out not only in Macedonia and Achaia, your faith in God has become known everywhere. And then later he says, Timothy has just now come to us from you and has brought good news about your faith and love. He's told us that you always have pleasant memories of us and that you long to see us, just as we also long to see you. Therefore, brothers and sisters, in all our distress and persecution, we were encouraged about you because of your faith. So Paul's a massive fan of the Thessalonians. He's like, guys, your faith in God's amazing. Your love for people is incredible. Your hard work's inspiring. Your endurance is legendary. We've been having a hard time, me and my friends, and we've been encouraged by your faith. It's, you know, it's made a difference to us. So he spots good things about them, and then he tells them to encourage them. He makes the effort. And the things he says are quite spiritual sounding. It's all about their character and their faith and love and so on. But the point is, he thinks about their strengths, and he makes a point of complimenting them, of telling them. So this is a particular type of encouragement. When you see something good in somebody and you tell them, and it feels great, doesn't it, if you're on the receiving end. Someone tells you something good about you, you think, yeah, brilliant, thank you. But there is a potential problem. if we only do this. And the problem is this: because of human nature, we have a tendency to buy in to praise too much, and we build our sense of worth and identity on the things that we're being praised for. Even if you wouldn't call yourself a Christian, you must have experienced this. Someone tells you you did something well, and it feels good. You know, you think, well, they just said I'm the best harmonica player in this room. Great. But the difficulty comes when you start to use that thing, whatever it is, as a yardstick for your own value. In the beginning, you're pleased when people tell you you're a good listener, or you're good at budgeting, or you're great with DIY. But over time, the joy dissipates because you start to kind of feel the pressure to keep being that thing. It starts to define you. And you worry that if your standards slip, people won't like you or appreciate you as much. They'll lose the reason that they have to love or respect you, you tell yourself. And so you build your sense of identity on it. And before you know it, it's not a strength, it's a prison. And it's a problem. When I got together with my wife many years ago, she's looking really worried now. It's all right. I thought she was out of my league. Yeah. If there's anything everybody can agree on in this room, I was right. But I found she really appreciated it when I did small acts of service for her, like clean up after dinner or bring her cups of tea, stuff like that. And to be honest, by nature, I hate serving people practically. It's not my strength at all. But I had to learn to do it. And that, overall, that's a good thing. But I still try to do these things for her 13 years later. But the temptation is to think, if I stop doing those things, her love for me will diminish. I have that temptation. She says it wouldn't, but I don't know. But we all do this. We do it with other people and we do it with God. We build our persona, our identity, on how we live and what we can do. And when we speak positive words to one another, there's a danger that we feed the monster. There's a danger. If I tell somebody who's amazing at tennis that they're amazing at tennis, it's true and it's a compliment, it's encouraging, but the danger is that there's somebody who gets their sense of value as a human from being amazing at tennis, and I've just exacerbated it. Do you see what I mean? And by the way, one way to know if this is a problem for you on the other end is this. If you tend to get praise for being good at something or good in some way, what is your instinctive reaction when you come across someone else who does it as well or better than you? What's your instinctive reaction? Do you celebrate and enjoy their ability and their virtue, or are you possessed with envy? Which one do you do? That's how you know. Anyway, we have to say, it is still good to encourage people. It is still good to do by telling them something good about themselves. There is a place for that because God has given us all gifts and things that we're good at, and that should be encouraged, that should be celebrated, that's a wonderful thing. Society would be miserable if we never told each other anything that we had done well, but there is that potential downside. So that's one kind of encouragement, it's a good one, but it's not the absolute best one. Let's read a bit more of 1 Thessalonians. And in chapter 4, he writes this, Brothers and sisters, we do not want you to be uninformed about those who sleep in death, so that you do not grieve like the rest of mankind who have no hope. For we believe that Jesus died and rose again, and so we believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in him. According to the Lord's word, we tell you that we who are still alive, who are left until the coming of the Lord, will certainly not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will come down from heaven with a loud command, with the voice of the archangel and with the trumpet call of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. After that, who are still alive and are left will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so we will be with the Lord forever. Therefore, encourage one another with these words. And then immediately into chapter 5, it then says this. Now, brothers and sisters, about times and dates, we do not need to write to you, for you know very well that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. While people are saying peace and safety, destruction will come on them suddenly as labor pains on a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. But you, brothers and sisters, are not in darkness, so that this day should not surprise you like a thief. You are all children of the light and children of the day. We do not belong to the night or to the darkness. So then, let us not be like others who are asleep, but let us be awake and sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk at night. But since we belong to the day, let us be sober, putting on faith and love as a breastplate, and the hope of salvation as a helmet. For God did not appoint us to suffer wrath, but to receive salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ. He died for us, so that whether we are awake or asleep, we may live together with him. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. So here we get what I call Jesus-centered encouragement. And you may have noticed, this passage says the phrase, therefore encourage one another, twice. And each time it doesn't just say it out of thin air, out of nothing. It's kind of preceded by a therefore. When in the Bible you see a therefore, you've got to ask what it's there for. And the author's saying, yeah, encourage each other, but do it because of what I've just said. It's not just like out of nothing. It's encourage each other, but because of what I've just said. And if we look back at what he's just said, if we could maybe toggle between those slides a little, it's some pretty epic, cosmic, enormous stuff. In the first paragraph, it's basically sort of a summary of big Christian beliefs. He says, Jesus died and rose again. He's going to come back in this very dramatic way at the end. Those who are with him are going to be so forever. And then it says that line, encourage one another with these words. And the second paragraph says more. We don't know when Jesus will come back. People without him are going to get a bit of a shock. But his followers won't be quite as surprised as everybody else. So let's live in a different way. We won't be on the receiving end of God's wrath because Jesus has saved us. He's died for us. And then it says that line again, therefore encourage one another and build each other up. So this points to a very different sort of encouragement. It's on a different basis. It's much stronger. And it doesn't have any of the dangers. It's always good. The author knew that Christians would need encouragement. The Thessalonian church who received this letter were doing well. They were getting praised for how they were doing, even though we know historically they were facing a lot of trouble. People were giving them a hard time in that city. But Paul knew that even then, they needed this higher level of encouragement. They needed to hear one another point to Jesus. They needed a type of encouragement that went over their circumstances, that went over everything in their lives. The day I was thinking about this last week, I got an email from my daughter's nursery, and I often use her as an illustration because she's cute and hilarious, but this is amazing. I'd just been reading those exact paragraphs, and I got this email. At the nursery, they write down some of the conversations the kids have, and then they send it to the parents, just so you can see. So this is a conversation between a little boy and my daughter Anita, and bear in mind, they're both four. So the little boy said, this is in the group, you grow and grow and grow up, and then you get old and die. That's life. And Anita said, yeah, that's right, and when you've died, you can live with God. It's lovely, isn't it? And the little boy said, when we die, the person who created us can make us come back to life because he has magic powers. And then Anita said, the person who created us was called Jesus. I know all about Jesus and God because I go to church and I sing about him there. And the little boy said, I just know because my mummy told me. But she's nailed it. That's my daughter. She's nailed it. When it comes to the big questions about death and suffering and purpose and identity, and we're having a hard time, or even if we're having a good time, but we know that hard times will come, the best way to encourage one another is not to find more good things about each other and go on about them, but to point to the bigger story and remember our place in it. The story that is beyond our circumstances, beyond whatever bad thing is happening, the story that stands over our future, the story of how God intervened in the world through Jesus. That is the story that for 2,000 years has encouraged, has given courage to millions of followers of Jesus, even through the most appalling things. And it's the greatest type of encouragement. It's for everybody who knows Jesus, regardless of circumstances, because it's not about you. It's not about how you're doing or what you're good at or what your gifts are or all your virtues. It's not about you. And it has no downside because there's no danger of it snagging onto your ego because it's not about you. It's not a thing that you did or can do. It's just this bigger story about what Jesus did, what's happened, what will happen, and he's at the center of it. So the greatest possible encouragement, the thing that will give you courage and motivation and inspiration in any circumstance, is not a thing that comes out of yourself. It is a thing that comes through Jesus. And that's what Paul is saying in this letter we have got to talk about if we want to encourage one another. So that's what he told Thessaloniki Community Church in about 50 AD. What about Maybridge Community Church here and now? If you're visiting, we're in what we call Partnership Month. We think about what it is to be part of this church, and we use the language of being partners rather than members. And being part of this church means many things, but the priority, the urgency of encouraging one another is very significant right now. Along with all the tricky stuff that's happening in the world, We're also a church that's at the start of a time when we don't have a senior leader. We don't know how long that will be for, and that creates an uncertainty. One of our security blankets that some of us may have has been taken away. It's not there. And it means that in this time, many people will need to step forward to fill gaps, take on leadership, be responsible. And to do that, people need encouragement. Everybody needs it. If you see somebody taking on more, stepping out of their comfort zone, serving more than ever before, please do encourage them in it. Encourage them. Take the time. Speak positivity and appreciation. Hold back on the criticism, even if it's true. You don't necessarily need to say it. Think carefully. But more than that, we all need the Jesus-centered encouragement. He holds history in his hands. He died and rose again. He's coming back. He saved us. So I think he can be trusted to look after Maybridge Community Church in this season. And whether we're in church on Sunday, we're in a partnership group in midweek, we're in a pub, we all need the encouragement that is the truth about Jesus. So let's get practical about this. For some of us, encouraging people is just a gift. It's just what you do. And some people in this room are wonderful encouragers. If that's you, thank you. The rest of us need you. You just sprinkle sunshine everywhere, and we appreciate you. Thank you. It's a gift. It is a gift. And yet, at the same time, all of us can grow in it. But I think some things hold us back. Maybe some of these things hold you back from encouraging others. If we could get them on the screen. And I think some of these things hold us back. Maybe it's we're British, and speaking positively to somebody is often seen as false or awkward. Maybe it's just our Britishness. We've just got to get over that a little bit sometimes. Maybe we think that people don't need it. Maybe there's somebody that they just come across as very strong and positive and like nothing bothers them. They need encouragement too. Think about that. Maybe it doesn't occur to us to say anything. Maybe we observe good things in people and we do notice that. We just don't tell them. We just don't think to tell them. Or we're excited about the bigger story of Jesus, but it just stays in our head for some reason. Or it might be that it doesn't occur to us to be encouraging because we're so focused on how we're doing, and we want lots of people to say nice things to us, but we don't think to look outwards and do the same. And I'm not talking about people who are genuinely struggling right now, but in general, if your way of life doesn't include a thought to encourage other people, something has gone wrong. Something has gone wrong. It's supposed to be part of what we do. It might be that we're jealous of someone's talents and we don't want to be humble enough to acknowledge them. I find this is very true of me, to be honest. If someone is better than me at something, I don't like that. The last thing I want to do is tell them. Oh, tells you everything about me. Or it might be that we've just forgotten the bigger story about Jesus and how it reframes everything we experience. We get mired in our limited perspective of how things are today and my circumstance and my feelings, and we forget that Jesus has already won the biggest battle. So things get in the way. They do. But what does it look like when we do it well? The great thing about encouragement is it doesn't need to be weird or sort of super spiritual sounding. It's not like, you know, somebody's cat dies and you have to say, take heart, brother, the Lord meeteth thee in thy pain. It's far more down to earth and real and normal. It's taking the initiative to praise somebody for something they've done or just something about them. That's a wonderful thing to do. And I think within this, being specific is a good thing. If you say to somebody, you're very caring, that's great. That's a nice thing to say. But what's even better is when you say something like, last Thursday, I was really struggling, and you were very caring, and that really helped. Specific is better because it doesn't feel like flattery. Specific is better. And we can praise people for their faith in Jesus, just like Paul does with the Thessalonians. It doesn't need to be weird. It's just, you know, your trust in God is great. Really, it really spurs me on. Thanks. Just very simple words. But most importantly, we need to point one another to that greater story that we're part of. Every time we meet together in this context or in midweek in some form, or maybe we're just having a chat in a pub or a cafe, just reminding each other of the goodness of God, of what God has done for us. That's the type of encouragement that we all need. So to finish, a little encouragement challenge for you. Why not do something encouraging today? Here's a couple of things. Why not say something encouraging to somebody over coffee at the end of the service? I think we can all do that. You might have to pick the right person. Why not say something encouraging to somebody at the end of the service? And also, secondly, this afternoon, why not text or call or speak to someone and just tell them something you appreciate about them and something about how you think God sees them because of what Jesus has done? Very easy. Imagine if everybody in this room did that today, just this afternoon. Not that hard, doesn't really cost you anything. Imagine if we all did that today, how much of a difference it would make to the church, just for today. And then imagine if we did it all the time. So why not do it today? So as we look to encourage one another as a church, absolutely, let's tell each other what we appreciate. Let's big each other up. Let's celebrate one another's gifts. Let's do compliment-centered encouragement. But let's major on the Jesus-centered encouragement. That's the best one. That is the thing that we really, really need as a church.
It's challenging stuff, isn't it? It's challenging stuff, but we follow a great encourager. We follow a God who went before us, and everything that he ever asks us to do, he always did it first. And he always lived that out in everything that he did. And one of that, part of that great big story that we can use to refer back to encourage us, that even when we turn the corner in our lives and it looks like everything is a disaster, that even when all the things that we normally hang our trust in and all the things that we depend on fall apart, one of the things that we can come back to every single time that will never fail is that love that we sang about actually before we began. Heart of my own heart, whatever befalls, still be my vision, O ruler of all. That phrase has echoed in different words all the way through this service about bringing our praises even when we're grieving, about whatever befalls, letting God be our vision, about finding our encouragement not in people telling us necessarily about the things that we do well, but in pointing back to the God who is awesome and who has us. You know, you were right earlier when you said, Hannah, that actually when we're going through tough times, when we're grieving, when we're mourning, when it's impossible, actually the reason that it can unlock things when we choose to sing these songs of praise, even if we don't feel like it, even if it feels like we'd rather sit in a corner and hide under a duvet, is because it reminds us who God is. And by choosing to put him back on his throne, not that he ever left it, but on the throne of our lives, with our praises, by choosing to remember who he is, by choosing to remember how awesome he is, it does unlock the things in our life. It unlocks something in our heart because we remember it's not just about us. It's always about him. So I'm going to send you out to have a wonderful week, but keep God in that place, on the throne, where he belongs. Remember to praise him. Remember who he is. Remember it's not just about you.